Hi, this is Michael Edward Miller, host of Around It About. Coming up on the show, we've got a conversation with acclaimed military fiction author Jeff Shera. His latest novel, The Smoke at Dawn, takes place in 1863 and recounts the Battle of Lookout Mountain and other important local Civil War history. Stay tuned.
WUTC 88.1 is a community radio station, and we want to hear from you. If you have ideas or story leads for Around and About Chattanooga, you can give us a call at 423-425-2224 and visit us online at WUTC.org.
Support comes from Stone Source, providing marble quartz and granite countertops and installations. Stone Source since 1999, 2521 Broad Street, 267-4386, online at stonesourceinc.com. Funding comes from Knitting Mill Antiques, located at 205 Manufacturers Road on the North Shore and home to over 75 dealers displaying a variety of antiques and collectibles. 267-1922 on the web at knittingmillantiques.com.
Hello, and welcome to Around It About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller, and today I have a guest who writes critically acclaimed novels about war. You might remember his debut, which was about the Civil War. It was titled Gods and Generals and became an instant New York Times bestseller. It was also the basis for a major motion picture of the same name. Jeff Shera has also written bestsellers about the Revolutionary War, the First World War, World War II, his latest novel is titled The Smoke at Dawn, and he's coming here to Chattanooga for an author talk on June 5th. In this interview, I'm speaking with Shera about why his new book should be particularly interesting to people who live in the Tennessee Valley, and we'll also talk about how his novels are different than a lot of historical fiction out there. Jeff Shera, welcome to Around It About.
Thank you. Pleasure.
We've got a lot to talk about. I also want to talk about how you got started writing, because that's a pretty interesting story as well. But first of all, let's talk about this latest book, The Smoke at Dawn.
It's the third of what will be a four-book series of the war in the West. And a lot of people don't think of Tennessee as being West.
Yeah.
But, in the 1860s, very much anything west of the Appalachians. And it, as I said, it's the third of the series. The first two, you had Shiloh and Vicksburg. The third one, The Smoke at Dawn, deals with Chattanooga, with the campaign right there, Lookout Mountain, Missionary Ridge, the town itself, the aftermath of the Battle of Chickamauga. So it's very relevant to your area, for sure.
And it seems like with this novel, it's not historical fiction in the sense of fictional characters. You're trying to really tell the story as accurately as possible with the real people, the real generals, the real commanders on the field. What are you hoping that readers get out of such a realistic depiction of the battles?
Well, I mean, my job is not to just make up stories. I mean, obviously with fiction, you can do that. I mean, you can do anything you want to, but I really... I like to just tell you what happened and tell it to you from the points of view of these primary characters, the people whose decisions actually were responsible for the history. If you just get it right, if you just stick with the facts and explore these characters and find out what kind of interesting people they were, both North and South, you end up, what I have found, you end up with a really good story to tell. And I enjoy that, and I think the readers that I've talked to over the years seem to enjoy it as well. And again, you don't have to play games with history or make it a soap opera or jazz it up or any of that kind of stuff. Just tell the story. And that's what I try to do.
How many historical novels have you written at this point?
Well, this will be my 13th.
Wow. And this one taking place in 1863, it's after big battles like Gettysburg have happened, big battles like Vicksburg. What's significant about the Civil War in this period, 1863? What's interesting enough about this to devote a whole novel to it?
Well, there, first of all, a lot of what happens in 1863, I mean, people are, historians argue about which is the turning point. I mean, what changes the war? A lot of people say it's Antietam. People say it's Gettysburg. People say it's Vicksburg. I actually think Vicksburg is probably the closest answer. But by the time of what happens in Chattanooga in the fall of 1863 has less to do with the actual, with the place, than it does with the people involved, because the leadership on both sides is changing rapidly. It's evolving, and one of the great catastrophes for the Confederacy is who their commanding general is at Chattanooga, and that's Braxton Bragg. And, I mean, this is a man who, for, again, unfortunate for the Confederacy, he wages war so much with his own subordinates than he does with the Yankees. That's a problem, and it causes a lot of difficulties for an army when they are facing across the way Ulysses Grant, who is the rapidly rising star of the Union Army. And Grant understands that, you know, if he can take and succeed in defeating Bragg's army, Chattanooga is a key rail port as well as the river port. I mean, the Tennessee River obviously is hugely important for moving supplies. The Confederacy is in serious trouble if Chattanooga remains in Union hands. Grant knows this. Bragg knows it as well, but Bragg is his own worst enemy. That's the sort of the overall story, but there are so many other characters involved, people that you know, you might be familiar with, names like William Tecumseh Sherman or George Thomas, the Union commanders, and then Patrick Claiborne on the other side, Nathan Bedford Forrest, I mean, the Confederate generals, whose actions, I mean, as I said, make the history. I mean, these are the stories that I just love to tell.
Let's talk about Bragg for a minute. When you're writing fiction, and you're just writing pure fiction, one of the commandments to fiction writers is your characters need to have clear, believable motivation that the readers can understand and identify with. But in history, it's not always clear why people did what they did, and historians can spend years and years arguing about why something happened. With Bragg, it seems like he did make some really bad decisions, and we're not entirely clear why, and your book kind of explores that.
Yeah, and it's funny because a lot of historians, and I get a big kick out of this because I'm not an academic historian, and I know a lot of academics, and Bragg is one of those characters that there's really very little debate about. there's not a lot of fog around this character. I mean, most people simply don't like him. And he, you know, unfortunately for the Confederacy, the one person who does like him is Jefferson Davis. And so that's why Bragg's in command and why he remains in command. But Bragg, I guess by modern terminology, you would have to describe Bragg as with a certain amount of paranoia. I mean, he believes everybody around him is out to get him, and he creates his own list of enemies, and he's going to deal with those people as harshly as he can. Unfortunately, those enemies, some of whom happen to be some really first-class battlefield commanders, you can't afford to, you know, get those people mad at you, and that's exactly what he does.
It's really interesting when you're reading the book to see how Bragg, as you said, he's really paranoid. He spends so much time and energy worrying about what his subordinates are doing and whether or not they're plotting against him, and he doesn't take their advice even when they're right, just because he doesn't trust them. What is it like for you as an author to have to spend so much time with someone who's such a kind of an unsympathetic protagonist?
It can be a challenge, but part of it, and I have to say this, part of it is fun. I mean, there's nothing worse than a boring character. And if I find somebody who's not terribly interesting one way or the other, he really doesn't make it into the book as a primary voice. Not that I'm, and again, I'm not like trying to stir up a hornet's nest of controversy or anything like that. I'm just trying to find these people whose voices not only tell a good story, but tell the best story that I think I can tell, and keep the history accurate. I mean, you know, you've mentioned a couple times fiction. I mean, a fiction writer can do anything he wants to, but what I try to do is get it right. What makes my novels, well, what makes them novels by definition, is there's dialogue, and you're in the heads of the characters, so that has to be called fiction. But I do my research. I mean, that's a big part of it, is to hear the voices of these people, hear their own words, where I feel comfortable putting words in their mouths. I mean, that's a risky thing to do, and I understand that, but it's part of the fun.
Are there any fictional characters in the novel at all? I think there was at least one kind of viewpoint character who was somewhat made up.
Well, what I do is I particularly with the characters I call the grunts. I mean, that's a modern term, but the foot soldiers, the you know, the kid marching with the bayonet in his hand. I've had a character all the way through the first three of these books, Dutchie Bauer from Wisconsin. He begins in my research as a real person. I mean, I find there's so many memoirs and diaries and collections of letters now to draw upon, and I find a character who's really interesting, and then I expand that character, and so he becomes a composite where he's, you know, in other words, everything happened. Everything that happens to Bauer did happen. It's real, but it might have happened to three or four different people. But he does become a composite for the experiences of that, of the foot soldier. I started that in my World War I book, when you need that private. You know, you need the guy out there facing the enemy when the generals are way back behind the lines. And Bauer is that character.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Jeff Shera. He's a war author. He writes novels about war, particularly the Civil War. His latest one, The Smoke at Dawn, is set here in Chattanooga in 1863. You were talking about giving dialogue and giving thoughts to real historical people like General Grant, for example. How do you get that right? How do you get their idiosyncratic vocabularies, their particular way of thinking? What kind of research do you have to do to try to do that?
Well, first of all, I stay away from modern biography, modern history. With all due respect to modern historians, that does me no good to hear their take on a character. I have to form my own feelings of, you know, I have to get to know these people. The only way to do that is to hear their words. And fortunately, for example, you mentioned Grant. I mean, with somebody like Grant, his memoirs are fabulous. I have his wife's memoirs, Sherman's memoirs, the letters, the accounts of the staff officers, the people who were there. That is the key to me of not just looking on the outside, looking in. I need somebody who's there, who's hearing it, smelling it, feeling it, whether it's good or bad. And I mean, I have to get to that point where I can hear those voices before I dare to put words in the mouths of any of these characters.
Do you ever find yourself accidentally sticking in anachronisms, phrases, words that people just wouldn't have used back then?
I am painstaking about that. There's nothing that destroys the credibility of historical fiction quicker than to do what you just described. You know, if you start putting lingo, you know, modern words in the mouths of characters, and I'm very careful about that. My editor and I, you know, we agonize over that. We research words to make sure they are accurate to the time because, yeah, that can be a real problem. And I love the fact that readers pick that up. I mean, they're sharp about it.
That's author Jeff Shera. We're talking about his latest novel, The Smoke at Dawn, and his upcoming author talk in Chattanooga on Thursday, June 5th. We have more to come with Shera in just a few moments, so stick around.
Support comes from the Hamilton Firm, a Chattanooga law firm handling complex and catastrophic injury cases throughout the tri-state area with attorneys licensed in Tennessee, Georgia, and Alabama. On the web at thehamiltonfirm.com. Funding comes from SGO Designer Glass, offering an array of architectural and decorative glass for residential, commercial, and religious use. 1776 Dayton Boulevard, on the web at sgochattanooga.com, 423-266-3344.
You're listening to Around It About Chattanooga. Today, I'm speaking with Jeff Shera. We're going to get back to that interview right now. In this segment, we're going to talk about his father, who is also an acclaimed author.
Your father was Michael Shera, who also wrote historical fiction. His novel about the Battle of Gettysburg, The Killer Angels, won the Pulitzer Prize in 1975. He died in 1988, and it sounds like you didn't actually start writing until after his death. What happened? How did that get you into writing these novels?
Well, first of all, growing up in the house of a writer, of a failed writer, which my father mostly was. I mean, he and my mother worked for a living to pay the bills because my father could never make a living with his writing. There was never any incentive for me as the kid to be a writer. I mean, I went the opposite, completely opposite way. My father got, I mean, his one monument, The Killer Angels, as you said, won the Pulitzer Prize. It became the motion picture Gettysburg, Ted Turner in 1993. The movie, when it came out, was enormously successful. It made my father's book a number one bestseller 5 years after his death. He had no idea that would ever happen to him. And it was really Ted Turner's people who came to me and said, Ted wants to make more movies. Wouldn't it be great to take your father's book, go in both directions, before and after, with many of the same characters, and tell more of these stories? I had never done anything like this before, but I thought it was something I'd like to try. I had no expectations and went into this. The first book was Gods and Generals, And it was just a prequel to The Killer Angels. And I had, again, no expectations. Well, the publisher in New York, who, you know, with Killer Angels now a number one bestseller, they take my phone calls, and I'm talking to them, and they said, well, send us the manuscript. Like, oh, okay, fine. And the call I got back was, we don't care if it's a movie. You know, we like Ted Turner, but we don't care what he does with it. We think it's a book, and here's a contract. That day, I mean, I'll never forget it. That changed my whole life. And I, from that point, I was a writer. And I never would have believed, you know, my life would have taken that turn.
Were you consciously trying to emulate your father's style? Were you trying to develop your own style? What was going on when you were writing this first book?
Well, first of all, the format of all of my books follows the same format my father used in The Killer Angels, which nobody had really done before. He takes you into the heads of four different characters, and each chapter is a different point of view. So he moves you back and forth through the timeline by following these different characters. That format, I did consciously make the decision to do that. But as far as the writing style, I've had a lot of people say that they can see a lot of my father's style in what I do. I mean, that's a tremendous compliment. But I don't set out to do that on purpose, because you run out of gas doing that after a while. You can't just focus on style. You have to tell a good story. And, you know, as my sister said, I mean, whose writing has influenced you more than anybody in your life? I mean, it has to be Michael Shara's.
When you first started writing and you were doing this, what kind of research did you do? Was it primarily just going through research your father already had done? Did you go out and do your own, actually walk the battlefields and see these places yourself?
Well, you just said a key thing, walk the battlefields. That was something I had done with my father as a kid at Gettysburg when he was working on The Killer Angels, and that stuck with me. I remember the impact it had seeing certain places, walking in the footsteps of these people, you know, walking past where they died, walking past where, you know, where the blood was shed. That's a really important part of the research. I don't want to sound mystical about it, but it almost is. I mean, walking in the footsteps, you really get something out of that. But the other part of it, not that I did the same research my father did, because he was dealing just with Gettysburg, but I understood the type of research, getting into the heads of the characters, getting the memoirs, the diaries, the collections of letters, and you know, visiting the homes, the libraries, the places where these people went to school, places like West Point, very important to me. So, the research very definitely is similar to what my father had done. That was a lesson learned.
And you actually wrote one nonfiction book that's a kind of a travel guide to Civil War battlefields. You say there are places that you think every American should visit. What are these places? Why should every American visit them?
Well, what I chose places not for the most historical significance, but for the greatest state of preservation. In other words, the example I use, you got a car full of people are on summer vacation. They drive past a sign that says Shiloh National Military Park. Why should we stop? Well, here's why. And that's what I try to do. We aim the book. It's not for the academic historian who already knows all that stuff, knows every inch of the ground. It's aimed at what we call the backseat people. You know, you've got a family driving around Gettysburg, and they, the front seat people, they're reading all the monuments and looking at all the cannons. The people in the backseat are saying, you know, can we go get a hamburger now? You know, that's the people I aimed the book at. And I have to say, that book is now in its seventh printing. I did not expect that. It has gone over really well. It is not a Park Service guidebook with my name slapped on it. And I pick sites including, I mean, Chickamauga is
yes.
One of the sites, and Lookout Mountain is a sidebar for that as well.
What is significant about Chickamauga as a preserved battlefield today?
Well, first of all, the preserved is the key. When you can go there, even if you know nothing about the battle, you can walk that ground and see it, see what happened, get a feel for it. You will get something out of it. You don't have to be a history buff. And I can give you other examples. I mean, I mentioned Shiloh. There's Vicksburg, Gettysburg, Antietam, Fredericksburg, and Spotsylvania in the wilderness, Chancellorsville. I mean, these are places where enough has been preserved where walking that ground will change you. I mean, it will really make a difference. You will really get a sense of either the horror or the drama of it. Very moving places. Plus, I throw in the quirky. The little things that you can find today to make it just a little bit more interesting. It's not just a history lesson.
Your latest book, The Smoke at Dawn, as we were saying, it takes place here in Chattanooga, the Battle of Lookout Mountain. Did you actually come here and walk around doing research?
Oh, yes. And now, of course, one of the unfortunate things, and this is not just a slam on Chattanooga by any stretch, it happens everywhere. The town has sort of filled up a lot of what was the battlefield, but there are places, there are still, you know, magical places you can go there. I mean, Lookout Mountain is a fabulous place. I love going, being up there. I mean, the rocks aren't different. The rocks are exactly the same as they were in 1863. And, it is a very, very special place. But yes, walking the ground. I mean, obviously, a lot of it's now homes. I mean, people, you know, private property, and I respect that. But there still is a lot to see.
If the South had been able to keep Chattanooga, how do you think that would have changed the war?
Well, first of all, Grant's reputation explodes after Chattanooga, and Grant ends up in command of the Union Army by Abraham Lincoln sort of plucking him out of there and taking him east. That might not have happened, and had Grant not been in command, well, how would the war have ended? I mean, that opens up a whole possibility of conversation. But also, I mean, Chattanooga is a rail hub and a river port hub for the Confederacy, and a lot of the material coming eastward out of Alabama and Mississippi that is feeding the Confederate Army, by losing the rail lines that come through Chattanooga, that stops. And it makes it much more difficult, and it also opens the door, and as we, you know, the rest, as we say, is history, but it opens the door for Sherman to go to Atlanta. And that really seals the end for the Confederacy. When Sherman takes Atlanta and then marches to the sea, it's over. And so Chattanooga is the doorway to that.
There's one really interesting scene in the book where the soldiers, just kind of the grunts, the foot soldiers, from the Confederacy and the Union have reached a sort of a truce, and they're actually trading goods and things like that. Can you tell me about that scene? What happened there?
Well, that happens a great deal during the war where, you know, the foot soldiers, there's not a lot of just inherent hate for each other. I mean, yeah, they're at war and they'll shoot at each other, but they're across, you know, they're on either side of the Tennessee River. And one of the things that the Confederates have a lot of is tobacco. And they might have local newspapers. One of the things that the Union have is coffee. There's the makings right there of a really good trade. And so what they'll do is they have their own little private truce. The officers often aren't even aware of this, but it's that foot soldier who, you know, they'll paddle across on a raft and, you know, at night and under a flag of truce, and they end up making friends. They end up swapping, again, as I said, coffee for tobacco is a big one, and reading each other's newspapers and, you know, and all of that. And it really is, it infuriates the officers. It goes against, you know, orders. And yet somehow these guys can go back on their side of the river, and when the bugle sounds and when it's time to start shooting, they start shooting. And it really, so they're never quite real, they're never really friends. But it's just an interesting phenomenon, and I think that's the key when you look at the American Civil War. This is us. You know, we're fighting against each other, and we're all Americans. And even if you're a Confederate or a Yankee, you still recognize a similarity and a kinship with that guy across the way.
Your novel, Gods and Generals, was turned into a movie with Robert Duvall and some other really big actors. How did you feel about that? Do you feel like the director did a good job of keeping everything historically accurate, or did they have to cut things to make it fit into the format of a movie?
Well, they always have to cut a lot, and that was very disappointing to me, just the volume of what's in the book that simply couldn't be in the movie. It would have been an 8-hour movie. As it was a 4-hour movie. But, I mean, I understand. I mean, I went into this, you know, I was somewhat disappointed in some of the things that are missing, but I also understand had it been a miniseries, I mean, had they wanted to put it on, you know, on TV or on HBO or something, they could have included a lot more, but it's the nature of the business. I mean, I'm very fortunate they made a major motion picture out of my book, and there's nothing to complain about that.
You'll be here in Chattanooga June 5th at the library here in downtown Chattanooga with your new novel, The Smoke at Dawn. What are you planning to talk about?
Well, I'll talk about that book particularly. One thing my wife gives me grief for is that I'll tend to stand up in front of an audience and give away the whole book. And I've got to be careful not to do that. I take away all the incentive you would have to actually go read it. But I certainly will talk about what happened there. I mean, I know a lot of people in Chattanooga are interested. Maybe you don't know. I mean, maybe there's a lot that happened there that a lot of people are not aware of. And, you know, I enjoy doing that. I enjoy talking about that. I talk about the entire process of, you know, putting words in the mouths of these characters and what that's like. And also I talk about my father and the Killer Angels and what that book did and how it opened so many doors for so many other writers, and as well as people like Ken Burns and Ted Turner to get more involved in this and just bring the subject matter to an enormous audience.
What is your website?
The website is simply my name. It's jeffshara.com, J-E-F-F, and it's S-H-A-A-R-A. And you can find my entire itinerary in there for the book tour. You'll find reviews of my books, descriptions of the books, this book in particular. And I also sell autographs. You can buy a book through the website, and I autograph them.
It seems like you've covered many of the major wars for the United States. What are you planning to do next, basically?
I would really like to do Korea. I love doing stories that people don't know. And, you know, most people don't know, you know, very much about what happened in Korea unless you were there, unless the veterans, and there's fewer of those every day. That's really a story that's pulling at me. I really would like to do a Vietnam story someday. Afterward, the War for Texas Independence is a terrific story, and I'm not just talking the Alamo. There's a lot more to it than that. I think I've got a pretty full plate. I think I'll be doing this for a while.
Well, Jeff Shara, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
It's my pleasure. I enjoy it.
And again, Jeff Shara will be here in Chattanooga at the Public Library on Thursday, June 5th at 6 p.m. Admission is free, but you do need to get tickets in advance. More information is at 757-5310. That's it for Rounded About. Thank you all for listening.
Around and About Chattanooga is a production of WUTC with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC. Find us online at wutc.org.